Welcome to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast all about stories of safety leadership, presented by Dale Carnegie and the Board of Certified Safety Professionals.
Listeners, we have not just a treat in a fun way, but an opportunity today to really be able to think from the heart as we have this discussion. So we got good stuff ahead here, John.
Yeah, no, I'm excited, Merle. We've got Will Hewitt here with Gen 9 Earth. And Will, thanks for joining us today and taking time from your busy schedule to do this with us. Talk a little bit about how you got into this field and how you started to be excited about some of the safety things that you might be working on now.
Well, thanks for having me, you guys. It's really a privilege to be in this conversation with you today, too. So I started in the field of safety and safety leadership about 23 years ago, and it was not intentional. I never in my life thought that I would be interested in the world of safety or certainly a professional in the world of safety. And what happened is I graduated from a master's program in leadership and organizational change and ended up finding this consulting firm that was doing some really progressive work in the area of leadership. And they were doing it in the field of safety. And at first I thought, okay, that's probably not for me. But then with a little investigation and going on some site visits and that kind of thing and learning about their work, I realized, wow, the world of safety in a corporate environment is very unique in that there's a permission inside of that conversation for people to show up in a more humane and human way. And for people to not so much keep themselves limited to kind of the ideas of being a professional, but it's where being human and caring about the people in your life and that kind of thing comes in. And it just turned out to be this incredible place to work on leadership. And I've been doing that ever since.
Well, when I hear you say that, I know there is such an emphasis in this realm of, well, got to focus on these regulations and know the OSHA guidelines and know all this. And that has a part. But you're talking about focusing it more as human than just regulations. Could you just tell us a little more about that?
Yeah. So we like to say if you're only working on the visible side of safety, on the objective side of safety, the things you can see, the things you can measure, this kind of thing, and you're not looking at the invisible side of safety, the interiority of human beings, the invisible qualities of a culture. You know, any of us can walk on a job site and within 5 minutes, we get a sense of what is the culture of this job site. And actually, if you're only focusing on the objective side, then you're missing half of the opportunity to affect safety outcomes. But working on the objective side is easier because you can see it, you can measure it. It's not about me, it's not about us. We can go work on things. When you say, okay, if you're really going to go to work on the subjective side, on the interior game of safety or the inner game of safety, how would you even start to do that? And it takes courage for leaders to step up to that. But when they do it effectively, it changes everything.
Well, could you give us an example? Like when you go and talk to people at organization, when you first go there, how do you start even delving into things and get people to think maybe there's an hidden area that I need to consider?
That's a very good question. The reason we often get called in to organizations is because they've tried all of the conventional things. They've tried the investing in behavior-based safety, and they've tried the training and the ergonomics, all of which are absolutely essential. Improving their safety management systems, all of those objective side things are really important. But when they've tried all of those and they put millions and millions of dollars into those and they're still hurting people, then that's when we get the call often. And And when we go in there, we always like to start with the people in the top of the organization, because we find if we have a heart-to-heart conversation with them and then they are really willing to take this on, then it's much easier when you start to work down into the organization. If the people who are in the organizational community look to those leaders and they say, wow, something's shifted, they really mean it now. It's not just words, it's not just management speak, they really mean it. So we work with the executives and we have some sort of provocative ways to start to open up the conversation with them. For example, a colleague of mine who I respect greatly, he will sometimes start, he'll go into a room of executives and he'll say, how many people is it acceptable to hurt at work?
Ooh, what a question. Mm-hmm. What a question. Okay.
You know, it's a pretty simple question, right? And I use that all the time too. And I've never in 20 years heard any answer other than zero. So then we put up the safety statistics for the last year.
I assume, and there's, we asked the I assume question, there's zero, right? The
of course.
Okay, go ahead.
Of course, yeah. And then we asked the question, and this is the provocative part, how many people did you accept getting hurt in the last year? Mm-hmm. And when you put those two questions next to each other, it's pretty, it really hits home. And there's often silence in the room after that. And then there's a great conversation. Sometimes people will say, wait, we didn't accept them getting hurt. We're trying to reduce injuries every year. Okay, but you're still operating your company, right? Right? So in a way, there is an acceptance. And that begins a journey of a conversation about making safety personal, about the most important person to change when it comes to safety is yourself. You know, so often when we want to run safety programs, we talk about how are we going to roll it out to the people out there where it really matters, where the place to start is right here. And that is actually for everybody, no matter where you are in the organization, the place to start is right here. And then it radiates out from there.
Yeah. So let me, I think you and I are aligned on a lot of things here. So I'm enjoying this, is that I'm going to give you a statement. I'm curious to your feedback. I believe, and I'm not smart enough to back it up with stats, but the objective side of safety, like when we think about the metrics, is probably only 25% of the actual story at an organization. You know, when you think about what you're doing, does that resonate with you?
Absolutely. I don't know if I'm not an expert in those types of statistics either, but one thing that we work with is what is the story? Because the way people are talking, the way they're speaking, the way they're feeling about each other, all of that, which is a whole separate domain from what's actually happening and the material work that's happening, the story is incredibly important. If the story around here is we're not treated well, they push us too hard, they say things about safety, but they don't really mean it, that's gonna be so influential on the safety outcomes, right? So working in the realm of interpretation or of story is essential and gets you a long way. I would maybe agree with you that it's 75% of what's going on.
So as you're creating those conversations with executives, I mean, ultimately, I think that's your starting place. You know, talked a little bit about you get past that initial shock. No one's going to raise their hand and say, yep, we're good hurting people. That's us. And thanks for coming. And we'll see you next week or something, right? There's going to be a challenge there. And how do you morph that now into what are the actions that are necessary so that we can achieve what you think and what you're striving to achieve in terms of the safety at this workplace? What does that look like for you, Will?
Well, there's a lot of work to do before you get to kind of conventional ideas of action. know, eventually you're going to be doing trainings. You're going to be potentially revisiting the procedures to see if there are too many there for people even to make sense of. You're going to be out in the field more. You're going to be listening more. You're going to be making sure that people get that there's care and concern as at the source of the whole safety thing, that there's an intolerance of injury, basically, not like a kind of we're going to punish you if you get injured, but like a personal commitment that no one will get injured under my watch. But leading up to that being possible is a lot of work in having the leaders first stop and just take a look at the way things are today, right? It's very rare that they get a chance to do it. And also, you know, when it's facilitated in a certain way, they can be honest. They don't have to be doing the management speak thing. They can talk about what they're frustrated about. They can talk about what they don't know. And it's out of that conversation begins to rise a conversation for, well, what could we do around here? Given the way things are, what could this be like? And then you start to get the birth of a new North Star. And as I'm sure you've experienced, John, when the North Star of a company has something to do with a topic as inspirational or personal as caring for people, and that becomes a true North Star, then it's sort of anything's possible and starts to have radiant effects for the other parts of the business.
Well, I am not anti-profit. A business has to be profitable. But you're talking a different perspective that most people approach a workplace with. Most higher level people approach it different. I don't know that they've ever taken time to think about this. How did you all ever come up with this? I mean, this is different than most people think. How'd you do this?
It is different. Although I don't know what you guys would say about this in your experience inside corporations today, but I would say it's much more common today. Like you sort of to be a player in an industry that has high risk in it. It's very rare that you see like a global organization that's working in that space that isn't quite advanced in their culture of safety, in their programs for safety leadership, this kind of thing. I would say 20 years ago, it was very hard to find. But I think, Merle, it's been proven enough now that attending to the cultural side and the leadership side makes business sense. It actually makes profit sense, that and certainly reputational sense. It's hard to keep employees these days. And if they come into an organization where they know they're going to be taken care of, when they know their safety is a value, then that's a big attractor. So I would say there's a long evolutionary build to this moment that we could talk about if we had another 3 hours. I'm very happy to say that it is quite progressed, and there are lots of other challenges. And there are lots of smaller organizations that are not at this place as well. But there's positive things to see about it. I did want to share, if it's okay, one sort of concept in safety leadership that I think is not very much talked about.
Okay.
And I hope that your listeners will find it interesting. And I've worked with leaders all over the world, from, you know, the C-suite down to tradespeople, all kinds of different industries, all kinds of different sizes of organizations. And it wasn't until about 10 years ago when I was working on an oil refinery where they were putting in a major new unit. And so it was a major capital project, several hundred million dollars. And it was led by the project manager was someone who had been with the company for 30 years, highly respected, highly respected as a safety leader, really affable, friendly guy if you got to know him. And we had been working on this site with him to really build the culture of safety and care and leadership for safety among all the contractors for months. And one day, we always would end our days going and chatting with him about how it went and his perspective on things, kind of a debrief. And the problem that was happening at this project was there was a general contractor who was very, the team on the site was very old school as far as the way they led the work. So they really pressured on schedule. They said things about safety, but the workforce didn't really experience that when it came down to it. And there had been a recent kind of uptick in injuries and near misses. So it was kind of like, you know, if you've been in this work for a while, it's one of those situations where you start to get a little, you can just get the spidey sense that something's going to happen if you don't attend to it. And so we were talking to this gentleman, and I had with me a kind of rookie consultant that was new to the site with our firm. And she had spent the day out, you know, talking to craftspeople of all kinds, kind of getting their pulse on how things are going on the site. And she heard over and over this story about how hard they were getting pushed and how they were concerned about their safety, how they didn't feel comfortable speaking up, these kind of warning signs. And she asked the project manager, kind of with that beginner's mind, not holding nothing back, she said, why haven't you confronted this more directly? Why haven't you brought them in and kind of had a ultimatum conversation? Or why haven't you even kicked them off the site if they're so obviously causing a culture environment that it's hazardous? And he just got super quiet, and I got super quiet. And then I remember distinctly, he said, how could I do that? You know, very experienced project manager. And then she said, again, kind of coming from the freshness of her being a starting out consultant, she said, how could you not do that? And again, silence. And it's one of those silences that you really treasure, because you know a lot is happening, and a person who is very thoughtful and who is very strong in safety. And he just said, thank you so much, I will think about this. And as we were walking away, I realized in that moment that I was seeing a dimension of safety leadership, a very important dimension of safety leadership that I had been seeing for the previous 10 years, but had never really named. And I started calling it like invisible PPE, or our invisible safety suit. And what I mean by that is this guy, you know, he got to where he was. He got to where he was in his life and in his work by being nice, by being non-confrontational, by kind of steering to the edge of conflict rather than going directly into conflict, by being diplomatic. He didn't get there by being one of these people that just goes right at the issue, goes right at problems, you know, takes strong action. And so in a way, and then the reason that we're configured in these different ways, and we all have our own kind of configuration, is that we are designed miraculously to be safe ourselves. You know, from the moment we're born, we grow up in our families, we have the influences we have the ancestry we have the early life experiences of pain and difficulty. And all of this comes together to kind of shape our internal configuration for safety. And I know I'm talking sort of more in the psychological realm now. And I should say a disclaimer, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a neurologist, but I've had enough heart-to-heart conversations with leaders to see this and to see how limited people can be in their options for leading if they haven't looked at and taken on these invisible configurations for safety. So it was this incredible irony that these people that are incredibly committed to safety and demonstrated over many years, just by the way that they are walking the world, being in the world, are putting, like in this case of this project manager, he was putting, you know, many hundreds of workers at risk by not confronting this situation earlier. And so his configuration for safety was jeopardizing the safety of the people that he worked with. And so I sort of became more and more passionate about helping leaders illuminate their own designs for safety and to start to free some of that up, because often the way that we're designed for safety is not appropriate for the world that we're in today. It was designed when we were 6 years old or something. And once you start to see that, and once you start to realize you have more options, like I can show up as kind of fierce in some situations. I can show up as a quiet listener in some situations. I tailor my leadership to what's necessary because I'm focused on the purpose of no one gets hurt around here, rather than the unconscious focus of how do I stay safe.
It almost sounds like a measure, as I mentioned once before, of self-deception. Oh yeah, I just want to be okay here. I don't want to rattle cages. I don't want to upset anybody. But in that case, that story you told, his wanting to be nice was a real stumbling block for the well-being of other people.
Yes, that's just the crazy irony of it. Like his own programming for safety was jeopardizing other people. When he saw that, by the way, for this guy, it really hit him. And then begins the development process. What do you do with that information once you see that it's these kind of routines have been running you?
Yeah, and I think as you go forward, Will, I'd be curious your opinion. You mentioned configuration, and I think configuration and also bias is a component of this as well, because you only experience what you experience. And so the idea of the consultant that you reference, yeah, you know, I liken that to a fresh eyes approach. And so yes, there are times where when we would do safety walk downs or you would go out and visit job sites, I would bring an administrative representative, and they would say, why are you bringing that person? They just get the coffee and file the paperwork, right? And I said, I know, but they're not biased or configured in your case, Will, I like that term a lot, to accept what's out there. And so, yes, you know, it's like that first day, and I'd be curious how you use your team on this, Will, is where you walk out and you hear things going off and explosions and all kinds of crazy noises, and you're wondering, am I going to make it out of here today, right? But yes, by month three, you don't even hear that. And so because you've adapted to that environment, is that in your approach, do you take a diligent effort, a kind of a targeted effort to have that kind of fresh eyes, making sure you've got a different lens on that when you're working with your clients?
Absolutely. Yeah. And even if we've never been on a site before, we've likely been on a site that is similar to that. So we even have to try to, you know, sort of lessen our own bias based on sites that we've seen before without leaving behind the wisdom that we bring. But that is absolutely a best practice in our eyes, is finding ways to eliminate that bias, finding ways to one way to say it is to see what is actually there, mm-hmm, like what is actually here. And often we will take leaders out into the field and just, you know, they're so used to going out and, giving the management message, we really care about you, or they think it's very important to find the things that aren't going well. Sometimes we will take them out on a tour and just have them be quiet. And just have them say to us, what are you seeing? And then we'll ask questions to kind of point their attention in other directions. And absolutely, I love bringing people from different departments who aren't normally in the field out there for those fresh eyes. When it comes to kind of this idea of seeing your own safety suit, if you will, or your own invisible PPE, there's a kind of an analog to that fresh eyes thing, which is get feedback from the people around you. And what's ironic is that people like that project manager, he got praised his whole life for those qualities. So, and that when he would have, you know, feedback from his workplace, he would get praised for that. So it's important to have people in your life and to have processes. We use a really good 360 process that is kind of designed to illuminate these ways that we are kind of, as I said, configured or designed for safety. What are the things that we don't see in the ways we walk in the world that are absolutely about staying safe rather than being on purpose, right? So fear versus purpose.
Well, one of the Dale Carnegie principles is try honestly to see things from the other person's point of view. And this sounds like what you're talking about here, because I walk out and I see my view, oh, that's how I view it. But what if I could see things from the perspective of the people who are out there in the front lines? What if I could see things from their viewpoint? And then I'm just curious, Will, that configuration that that gentleman had about, well, I'm too nice to confront, what are maybe some other common configurations that go through people's minds that throw us off?
Yeah.
Are there any other common ones?
Oh, yeah. Well, I should say, just as a point of disclosure, that I was sitting in that same meeting room with those two people, and I was more like the project manager than I was like my colleague, because I had been talking to him for months and I had never asked him those same questions. So my own configurations are more like diplomacy, insight, being a good listener, this kind of thing. And they aren't so much as like sort of going for the jugular of difficult situations. I just wanted to say that.
Thank you for that.
I think that I'm like beyond all this. But yeah, so other configurations are, and we certainly see this a lot in industry, are control. So if I can control everything around me, then I'll be safe. Another one is humor. You know, if I can be the one who's always lightening things through humor, then I'm always sort of part of the group without taking it too far, you know. And it's like when you step into an organization, or I like thinking about, you're just in a busy city and you see all these people coming at you. Every one of them has something like this, something that they lead with, something that they're known for, something that they win with. And it's often the first thing you meet when you meet someone, right? And if you're lucky, if you have the privilege, you get to know them a little more and you see them more as a whole person. But there are lots of different configurations, Merle. So safety suit or safety PPE, invisible safety PPE, is a metaphor, right? Another metaphor is we're all walking around with internal safety committees, right? So like all of us have multiple ways to stay safe. Like, and if you could just, in a humorous way, think about this little committee sitting inside your head, then there's the part of you that, you know, is a little evasive when someone asks a direct question. There's the part of you that sort of counters or attacks when someone, or tries to be right. There's the part of you that's criticizes yourself so you don't speak up and make a fool of yourself. Like, these are all sort of characters around your internal safety committee table that are designed to keep you safe. And that's a whole other kind of story or way of looking at this that can be very useful in starting to work with our own protections.
Yeah, sounds like Inside Out 3 is coming to a theater near you. And so,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, really safety version of that one, don't
that's
we?
That's right. So I want to go back to something that you said, Will, that, you know, around this transformation in industry and more receptiveness to what I would call is employee engagement on the work execution and pieces like that. Can you talk a little bit about what is, what, when I see this, it looks like there may be organizational stamina, I'll call it, challenges, meaning, yes, I like that. Yes, I want to do that. But we're in month six. I'm not seeing the results that I want to see. I feel tired. I think I'm just going to go revert back to the old, right?
And the board may even be, the board director says,
that's right.
Hey, show me the money.
That's right.
How do you
overcome some of those? Or first of all, do you even see those organizational stamina challenges that I'm referring to? And then two is, if you do, what are some tips for our listening audience of how you can get through that?
Yeah, I think the last thing we like to do is make organizations dependent on us. And we have definitely had the experience. I mean, it's always a question of how long of a sort of intervention or how long of a program has enough of a jolt to the system that it shifts the dial a bit, and how much, starts to create sort of a fatigue around it. So they kind of get the point. And I can't give you a solid answer on that. Although what we do is right from the beginning, we say this will only shift the dial, move the dial, if the people sitting in this room actually take this on and actually make it a part of their wheelhouse, of the kind of core way that they show up in the business. And then if we, over those 6 months or whatever the month number of months are laser focused on that, on who are the people, who are the leaders that are really showing up for this, that gives it the biggest chance of success. And usually there's enough of a kind of aha factor when people see that, wow, the way I'm showing up kind of affects everything that's happening, that there's a lot of people who we call it sort of popcorn, a lot of people pop, and then they begin their journey. It's really, you know, it took you however many decades to become the way you are, and now you begin the journey to become who you want to be, and to kind of be in service of that, the things that are most important to you.
Oh, okay. Now I'm kind of nervous. Well, what if I'm seeing things and I think I'm seeing it pretty good, and maybe I'm going down a wrong path? Help me, Will. What advice would you give to people that are looking at this now and said, well, do I need to do some introspection? Where do I start? What do I do?
Well, if they're asking the question, should I, then it's interesting to say, why are they asking the question? You know, but if they're just hearing this and it's not like I'm preaching something here, I'm just like sharing my experience from working a lot in these industries. A lot of leaders are fantastic. I've met a lot of incredible leaders that I wouldn't say, you know, need a lot of help. They are already on a path of self-development. They have this, I like the phrase, are you available to lead? Are you available to lead? And what I mean by that is, have you done enough work and do you have enough self-awareness that when difficult situations show up, you are able to kind of respond in the way that is most appropriate to that situation? And it's a high leadership skill, because most leaders don't necessarily get rewarded for that or get into their leadership positions because of that. So it has to be sort of a calling at some point, or some people run up against their patterns in a way that they say, their people tell them or they realize they have to shift. But at some point, you've sort of accomplished enough that you start to say, am I accomplishing my purpose? Or am I clear about my purpose? And that when you do that, often that's the moment you say, I need to clean house a little bit here. I was talking last week, in fact, with a very accomplished project director in the energy industry who's led, you know, some of the world's largest capital projects. And I asked him and he's an amazing leader. I asked him, what's sort of your secret to being a leader for safety the way you are? And he just simply said, I've done my own work.
What do you mean by that? Tell us a little more.
Well, it's sort of this realm that we're talking about. He's developed himself. He's taken on his own personal development and his own leadership. And he is someone that I'd say is available to lead. He's someone with a clear North Star and who has the leadership skills, the credibility, and the freedom from those old routines enough that he can show up in many different ways appropriate to the situation.
Well, would you just give us a version of what it looked like when you've seen an organization change? We don't, of course, don't want the industry, don't want the name of the company, don't want that stuff. But can you give us just a picture in our head so we can see from beginning to end some of the things you saw take place in a transformation of a company that went from not doing well to the switch? What were some of the key happenings?
Yeah, there's one that comes to mind, Merle, that it was a family-owned construction company. And they were in a strong growth curve. And they were starting to see some worrying safety statistics coming out of the new cities that they were working in. And so we took them through this, some of those early conversations that I talked about, those kind of like really hold the mirror up to them and help them kind of see what's happening, sort of look at their own relationship to safety, perhaps how they've been treating safety as a statistic to manage versus, like you said, John, the story that's here, we're about people, we're about care. And in one of those early conversations, one of the senior leaders in the company who was a member of the family, of this family company, said that he suddenly saw the word family in a new way. And, you know, you can question whether corporations can ever be families, right? There's a
different
lot of evidence
conversation
to the other side of that, exactly. But from the standpoint of where he came from and where his team started to come from in leadership and leadership for safety and care, they started to come from that place. It's not like you have the family members working in the business and then the rest of the business. It's like the whole business is treated as that. And that didn't mean that they lowered their standards or anything. In fact, the other side, they raised their standards and they developed the pride about their approach to safety. And they had, you know, Merle, you and I spoke once before about the difference between safety as a value and safety as a priority. And I'd say that was a big shift with them. You know, safety was number one for them, they would say, before doing this work. And then afterwards, it was just who they were. You know, when they walked in the room, safety was who they were. You wouldn't hire this company if you didn't want a very strong focus on safety, on safe performance. So I think that was one of the most rewarding ones to have been in that intimate conversation where this one leader kind of had this light bulb go off, and then seeing now they're a much bigger organization and known for their safety leadership, not just in their company, but in the industry.
You're on to something, Will, where in order for an organization to achieve their desired results, this is a path that they'll have to plow if they haven't already plowed it. And a lot of our audience is, I'm sure this is resonating with them and they're thinking, okay, but my leadership has not had the epiphany. And maybe our performance isn't mandating us to a significant shift. How would you recommend someone take it from almost like the thematic and the spatial down to the, here is how you start these conversations, and maybe you can help your leadership have an epiphany. You can help your leadership recognize value, before they would engage with something like you. What does that look like for the folks in the field?
And just to build on that, because there are people who are mega frustrated. Mm-hmm. There are folks listening to this right now. I can guarantee, Will, they're saying, I need a copy of this, and I need to give this to my upper leadership and say, listen to this. This is the answer. Mm-hmm. What do those people do other than trying to beg them to listen to this?
That's a really good question.
That's why we ask you. Yeah. And it's,
that's why you're here, Will.
Well, you're doing a good job at it. I think that experience of being in the middle, or even, not in the middle, but lower than the middle in an organization, and feeling like, If they got it and they acted differently, everything would be different around here. What can I do about it? There's no easy answer for that. If they haven't taken on any kind of leadership development, the organization hasn't, or safety leadership development or self-safety culture change work, then it becomes like a process of relationship building and enrollment. Basically. So, everything has to start with relationship. We say this when we take, we do work with supervisors in the field. Do you have the relationship to influence this person that you're trying to lead? And it goes the other way too. And so it has happened in my experience that someone who is like, you would meet them and you would just have no doubt that in their core, they're committed to the well-being of the people that they work with, and that they take on that challenge of enrolling and bringing the leadership to the place where they're willing to do some work. And those people they're not saints, but they're incredible. They're capacity to do that. But I did say earlier that we always like to start at the top because it's very difficult. But even once, an organization is down this road a bit and has taken on safety as a value, and it does have it very present in everything that they do, that doesn't take away those dynamics, in my experience. There's sort of something endemic to organizations that there's always that looking up there and saying, if they only got it, then we would be different. So, I hate to answer it by not answering it, but I think it is, there's some things that you start an organization and it's just part of being in an organization. And then it's a constant art and challenge to confront that every day. One of the things we do say, because we do hear from craftspeople in the field, we hear this a lot too. Like, they're telling us to be safe. Why don't they spend a little money on PPE or, whatever it is? And you can hold that frustration, and you can to yourself say, I am not going to accept getting hurt here. And I'm not going to accept the people around me getting hurt. So everything I do, I'm 100% in for safety. I'm not waiting for them to do their 50% and need my 50%. I'm 100% in. I think they should be 100% in too. And I'm going to try to influence that. But many people, if they're in situations like that, they end up going to another company because of the frustration, which is another kind of reinforcement of what I said earlier, which is that if you want to retain employees, having a strong safety culture is one of the best ways.
I have some notes from when we talked before about some tips that you give about this idea of this individual or invisible PPE. Oh, could you relate some of those to us? Because this could really help us as we hear and think about them.
Yeah. So, okay. So I know probably everyone who's listening to this is a safety leader of some kind. You know, we are all in our own ways safety leaders. And if you are sort of intrigued by this idea of how has my life given me a certain way of being around safety that is undoubtedly influencing the way I show up at work as a safety leader in my personal relationships, you know, throughout my life. And you want to start looking at it. You want to start like exploring that a little bit. The first thing I would say is just be sort of in awe and have compassion for the fact that this is true, that we human beings somehow are configured for safety. And these patterns and routines that we've developed, each of us, our own unique mix of them, has gotten us to where we are today. So it's not to see that there's anything wrong here. It's to really have that compassion, but to say, okay, now that I see this, I see that there are some ways that I might want to kind of illuminate my protections that aren't working for me. And I want to start working on other ones. I like to say get good mirrors. And this goes back to what you were saying about fresh eyes, John, which is how can I, because often we can't see these ourselves, especially because they've been the way that we are and the way we lead in the world has been so praised for many people. Get good mirrors. And good mirrors means people who are willing to say the truth to you. You know, the best leaders seek feedback and they embrace the feedback, knowing that it's coming from a subjective place, but always like seeking real feedback and not kind of just selecting for the ones that you like. You can also do that. I said, we use a leadership 360 tool that we go out and interview the people that you work with. So that's another way to get mirrors. But just even if you just start being curious about it yourself, that in a way is using your own observational mind as a mirror.
Well, first of all, thank you for committing yourself and your life to the work to help people reflect and think on things. And John, I'll let you make the final comment to wrap things up and as we finish our time.
Yeah, I think, you know, number one, thank you, Will. It's not lost on me how important self-awareness is. And it shows up in safety, but it shows up in your life. And that self-awareness is absolutely critical in order for you to be successful in all aspects.
Yes. To take time to review.
So thank you for that, Will.
Thank you for your time with us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you both.
Listeners, probably better dial this one back and listen one more time, because there's a great deal of depth in this. And John, it really goes back to that simple formula that says be, do, and have. We want to have the results. The thing we need to do really starts with being be, and use had the insight, has to be flexible based on the situation. So there's a lot of solid insights here.
Yeah, I would agree. I think I would qualify this discussion as a thought catalyst, and it needs a little bit of soak time. I mean, one of my major takeaways here is get good mirrors and understand where you are at. And that's not a self-understanding. That may require additional inputs.
And not one of those mirrors or filters that just makes you look really pretty and really good all the time.
No, some people with those, Merle, they're not effective.
They just, we need the real thing, the real shot.
That's right.
It's good stuff, folks. Yeah. Worth listening to. Yeah.
Thanks for listening to My Big Safety Challenge, a podcast produced in partnership by Dale Carnegie and BCSP, with your host, Dale Carnegie Master Trainer Merle Heckman, and John Fisher, Director of Environmental Strategy and Corporate EHS at Duke Energy Corporation. Executive produced by Joel Bergai, directed by Giachi Liu, edited by Jared Grio and Kyla Anderson. Editorial support from Brandon Mohaupt. Social media support from Braylon Morgan. Consulting producers are Colin Brown and Mark Sullivan. To have new episodes delivered directly to you, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. If you'd like to share your story of a safety leadership challenge you faced, email us at info@mybigsafetychallenge.com. See you next time.